Okay, good afternoon. We continue with our board meeting and we're going to talk about revenue recognition. We start with paper 7B, which will be presented with Catherine, who just completed a marathon, I understand. I hope she's fully recovered and can present this paper in an orderly fashion.
Thank you, I'll do my best. Okay, agenda paper 7B then discusses the collectability considerations that were highlighted by the TRG in January and which were discussed by the IASB and the FASB in last month's joint board meeting. At that meeting, the FASB decided to make a number of clarifications relating to paragraphs 9E and 15 of IFRS 15, which were intended to help entities to interpret those paragraphs correctly. The FASB decided not to make any amendments to the guidance itself. The IASB were not asked to make any decisions at last month's meeting on this topic. However, a number of the IASB members did note that they would at most expect clarifications to be necessary and not amendments. So agenda paper 7B discusses clarifications that the IASB could make. The table in paragraph 25 of the paper summarises our analysis of each of the individual clarifications that were decided upon by the FASB. And in all cases, we think that the existing guidance in IFRS 15 and the explanatory material in the basis for conclusions is sufficient. So for that reason, we don't expect that making any of these clarifications would change an entity's reporting outcomes, and we recommend that the IASB does not take this approach. The paper also discusses the option of including an additional illustrative example. And that approach will be responsive to the concerns raised without amending any of the authoritative guidance of the standard. That would also provide stakeholders with a more permanent and accessible piece of guidance related to the discussions on collectability that have happened in recent months. Again, however, we don't believe that inclusion of such an example would lead to a change in reporting outcomes. And that's firstly because we think that the existing guidance is sufficient. And secondly, because we think that the issues that have been raised on collectability are questions of interpretation rather than judgment. As described in the paper, we would expect practice to develop in this area consistently with the IASB's intentions. So we don't believe that including an additional illustrative example is necessary, and because it's not necessary, we don't believe that it should be done. That's because we think that the potential consequences of making any change at this stage are not worthwhile when the changes are necessary. So in summary, therefore, we are recommending that the IASB does not take any action in response to the collectability concerns that have been raised by the TRG. And with that, I'll hand over to the board for discussion.
So who is in favour of undertaking no action?
No action.
No action. I mean, we can have a discussion about it. But
can I ask a question of the staff, which is, first comment is, if we were looking at it alone as just the ISB without the FASB having a parallel project, I think I would be very comfortable with the staff recommendations, especially against the background of the board having had discussions about what the intent was and very helpful paper like this one pulling together the different places where there's comments that confirm certain readings. I know that there's some discussion that says, okay, do you tip slightly the other way because FASB is deciding to move ahead with these? And I just wanted to make sure that our original plan was standing, that when we do our package ED, we would have in the basis for conclusion not only a discussion of the reasons for any changes that we are proposing, but also identify things like this. If we decide not to make these, that we would identify the changes that FASB is proposing, whether we expect it to require or permit divergence with, the text of, the IFRS standard, and why we think it's not necessary. I mean, I think for these, we would not expect any differences in outcome, unlike some of the other, one or two of the other things we've discussed. Is that still the plan that we would, anything like this, where if we didn't make the change, we would cover it? That's still the plan?
Such is the case.
Okay.
Gary.
Well, Catherine, as you know, I don't agree with you. I think for a number of reasons is, I think, although your beginning comment, I think the primary advantage is staying fully converged, which I do agree that's an advantage. I don't think it's the primary advantage. I think the primary advantage is to look through the TRG papers, the earlier discussion papers. A lot of people had a lot of trouble connecting the dots mm-hmm. on these things, and they're both practitioners and auditors and standard setters, and this was a more convoluted checking, you know, lining the dots, although I agree, is any clarifications or whatever we do wouldn't probably change the outcome. That's us as smart accountants sitting around this room, and same thing presumably in Norwalk, but there's thousands of people out there that have to live with this. Unlike a lot of other elements of revenue recognition, you know, whether it's they're narrow, you know, there's non-cash considerations, Sharia law, and even licensing important in a few places, but not broadly. Collectibility applies to everybody, and they really do. And for that reason, I think, I mean, I would either, whether it's pull up BC 46 into the document or makes the changes, if not word for word, the FASB does along those lines, I think would be helpful.
Philippe?
I say that I support the staff, but I think we have to acknowledge that it's not about systems. It's not about implementing new systems. It's about helping people make the judgments when and if they have to do it. And collectivity is not a systematic issue. It's how to apply the concept when you find a situation. And looking at the different possibilities, if there is one element, in my opinion, that could usefully be clarified, it is the one described in paragraph 13, little a. To what do you apply this collectibility test? Is it the whole amount, or is it only this amount to which the entity believes it is entitled to have right to consideration, which I think takes into account the problem of the variable consideration. If you have a variable consideration of a maximum 1,000, but you expect to be entitled to collect only 500, to receive only 500, based on your assessment of the variable consideration to which you are entitled, this is the amount to which you apply the collectivity test and not the 1,000, right? Yeah. I think this clarification can be useful. I don't think it involves any burden for preparers. It's not about implementing the preparation of transition to IFRS 15. It's not a systems issue. It's just how to make the judgment when and if they have to do it. I don't think it will disrupt anyone in the process of transition because there is no systems implication. So I think at a minimum cost for preparers and for us, we could usefully bring some additional guidance on this topic. You seem to be
I was just wondering what over and above what's in paragraph 9E of the standard you want to add, because it at the end of that sentence when it says you're assessing the collectability, it says the amount of the consideration to which you will be entitled may be less than the price stated in the contract, because the entity offers a price.
Why is it that FASB finds it necessary to restate that?
The point that more that they're clarifying is more the point that Catherine's got illustrated in the paper with, say, the example whereby, in the paper, whereby you're not assessing the collectibility of the total consideration in the contract because the entity can respond to non-performance by the customer by stopping to provide the services. So I think what they've, you know, one of the clarifications they're focusing on is on more that aspect. In other words, bringing to life the words in the basis for conclusions in BC 46 that sort of support 9E, to bring that into the guidance, both in some words and two additional examples.
But the assessment of that clarification in terms of the drawbacks on disrupting preparation for the transition or putting burden on the preparers is no more than what I said before.
Would it be helpful if I clarified our point around the potential consequences, because perhaps that isn't coming across ideally in the paper? We're not so much anticipating that there will be systems costs and such like. The concern is more around the fact that from the perspective of an entity who perhaps hasn't been following closely the TRG process, If the IASB issue any amendment to a standard this soon after publication, I think that there's almost a natural inclination for those that haven't been following to assume they must have done this because they expect there to be a consequence, and that the very process of trying to identify what is that consequence and do I have to do anything about it will involve a bit of...
That is true for any change we're going to make in June.
Absolutely, and it's
so
the fact that we think
accept that in June
change
we'll do something, I don't see any harm in adding this little bit to the package in June.
I would say the difference is we don't believe this would actually change any of the outcomes.
No, we don't expect any change. We expect to make it clearer for people in reaching the same decision, the same outcome, but maybe with more easiness in understanding the concept. The clearer we are, the better it is. It's not changing the outcomes, of course not.
Doug?
I agree with staff's recommendation. I don't think any further clarification is necessary at this stage. I think the example or some clarification works in very specific particular issues. However, it may confuse other silent majority. First of all, 9E, if you look at 9E, it talks about collectability. But in the first place, entity would not sell to the customer who has a doubt in collectability. So the first of all, population is not quite large, and there are specific cases. But in all cases, entity has some measure to protect their account receivable. So stopping the further shipment is just one of them. So they have other measures to protect their account receivables. So therefore, to explain it with based on some specific example may help somebody, but may confuse others. So we have discussed this revenue standard for 10 years, and we surveyed lots of things. We can provide the basic idea. We have already provided basic idea. I think the practice would understand what's our principle, and they can manage it. So let's see how the practice grows. That's better. But having said that, if we go different places with go to the different places with the U.S., then the question often asked is, should constituents of IFRS refer to the U.S. rule? That is the question I asked many times, especially from auditors. And on this point, I think we should be very clear. Currently, we only have IS 18, which is 20 pages or something. So therefore, in practice, especially in audit cases, they look at US guidance. That is the common practice. However, it would not be the case after the publish of IFRS 15. So we already have quite clear standard now. And then I respect the discussion in the TRG, but the rule created after the TRG to meet the US constituents' needs does not necessarily mean that should be applicable to the constituents of IFRS. So IFRS should be read as it is written only. So that point should be made clear. And on this point, Mary referred to the BC. We can provide some idea of what we are doing about TRG. That will help prepare us. So we have to make clear on this point.
Ian?
Yeah, I basically agree with the staff position, most of what Tuck said. I do get some comfort out of Mary's reminder that this will be addressed in the exposure draft, the fact that we're not doing anything, so it gives people an opportunity to comment if they think. On the following US guidance, my understanding is the clarifications made by the US won't make any difference to the outcome, so I'm not particularly concerned in this particular case about that. But I can accept the arguments here that the thing's clear. I'm surprised Gary thinks the dots are not connected. I think they are quite well. I mean, you might be saying, so even to not very clever people like me, the dots seem reasonably connected.
Can I respond? Because I think the dots are connected if you're a true, deep expert in this stuff. This has to be written for routine preparers, routiners, not national office people. So their full-time job is grinding through these documents.
I understand.
The fact that we're here and the FASB are having this discussion tells us, to me anyways, it fails that test.
Well, then I think we should have every TRG item here as well, because I could make the same point that they all fail the test.
No, but I think we got through, they did. I mean, this one we did not get through. We postponed the session. The FASB concluded it was unclear.
Sure.
I mean, I think most of them, I think, were very clear. But here, somewhere, this was less clear in terms of how to connect the dots the most. Although I happen to agree, I didn't necessarily personally think it was an issue, but we're here because enough other people do think it's an issue.
Pat? Thank you. I'm also in the camp of erring on the side of adding clarification to the standard. If we were just going to add an example, I would not go down that path for the reasons some of the board members articulated yesterday. It's not authoritative guidance, and it doesn't really add a whole lot of value. In this area, the reason why I would like to add the guidance is because this is one of three issues that we spent almost 24 months analyzing in advance of the standard, almost solely these three issues, right? Collectability, constraint, and licenses. And when I went back to, as I've told the staff, you know, the catalog of board member comments on this topic for the fatal flaw draft that counted, you know, in the neighborhood of close to 100 comments by board members, FASB, ISB board members, dealing with this to make sure they understood the application. I think what the staff is saying in the paper is true. When you put together the words in 9E, when you put together the words in the basis, TRG discussions, I think it's abundantly clear what our intent was. However, as Gary said, there are people who are not as engrossed in the details here. And you, in fact, as a preparer, do not have to observe guidance in the basis for conclusions. I mean, that's well understood and well known. So I actually worry about not serving IFRS reporting community as effectively as we could by having a standard that's in line with where the FASB is. I think also that it will be in the interest down the road of avoiding any type of additional interpretation questions that may or could come up. So I think as long as you have the time now, let's do it. This is one of, as I said, two or three where I would bother. I wouldn't go to the extreme that I think Ian is just suggesting. It, well, if you're going to do this, you know, you might as well do all of them. No, I do not agree with that philosophy. But this is one of two or three that I think it is worth erring on the side of being on the same page with the FASB, having abundant clarity, and so that we don't have to deal with these issues again. I do worry a little bit about the potential for structuring here. If, in fact, I choose as a preparer to ignore some of the guidance that I think is quite useful in the basis for conclusions, which I think is possible. And, you know, the guidance in paragraph 46, BC 46, I think is quite useful. There were some paragraphs in the fatal flaw draft which, you know, again, my view, and I know some of the other board members felt should have been in the standard. Unfortunately, they didn't get there. I would, at this point in time, err on the side and putting that guidance in. If we're on the same page as the FASB, I think that's an ideal situation. If we were to come up with our own additional words, that would be fine with me, too, as long as it's abundantly clear what the intent is. But my first choice would be try to work something out with the FASB staff. And again, I emphasize the fact that this is one of two or three issues. It's worth erring on the side of being on the same page.
We go, and then let's take a vote.
I personally not favor to add anything. It's also because of what Pat mentioned the reasons. You know, the three areas we're struggling with each other, I feel, relatively speaking, you know, the value payment and the licensing, we debated many times, even though it is a compromise, but at least we debated more thoroughly. My memory is on this issue, which I'm against, you know, the final conclusion, but I'm not dissent. If the final changes because of FSB board members, you know, the change suddenly, I don't want to mention which one of them. I don't know, I really not fully convinced we conclude ideologically and methodologically the same. This is why people may come back to us more questions because of different understanding, different background. We want changes when people come back say that we have another one. And this is why I personally don't favor, particularly in this area.
Sue?
I just wanted to ask Pat a question. If you were to go with what the clarification you're proposing, if I look at the box in paragraph 15, which is what the FASB have decided to do, are you just referring to the clarification to the equivalent of 9E, or are you also talking about this contract as terminated?
No, I'd be in favour of making all the changes that that the FASB are proposing in this area, just to be on the same page. As I said, I think when you read 9E and 15 with the basis, you should get to the same outcomes that any other preparer. But again, if you don't read the basis, because that's not the way you applying standards, you're reading the actual words, the literature, I think you can get to a potentially different outcome. And whether or not that's because of an error or because of intent is going to be hard to judge down the road. So I'd like to make it abundantly clear at this stage. We have the time. Let's just, you know, make these changes and make sure that the whole world knows what the standard says, not the standard plus the basis.
The reason I ask was I can see both sides of the argument on the collectability point on 9E, but starting to talk about what we mean by when a contract is terminated, I think could have massive repercussions in other bits of our literature, so I'd be much less sanguine about that.
I don't understand what you mean.
Well, this whole distinction of trying to draw between legal termination and accounting termination of a contract, I just wonder what the consequences of that might be if that's read in, I don't know, FI or somewhere else. I just haven't thought it through.
Okay. This wouldn't apply to FI.
Those words aren't unique.
Can I see who can support staff's recommendation?
Well.
Okay, then we continue with the effective date.
Turn then to agenda paper 7A on the effective date. This is over the past few months, including today, the boards have discussed.
What are you doing outside leasing?
We'll have
that
conversation later.
I probably do like a multitask.
I hear that leasing voice. Can you
I know, I was going to say, when we came here today, I was going to try and remind you all we were going to talk about revenue as opposed to leases.
We'll come back.
All right, continue.
We could talk about the effective date for leases, but not now, another day. So the effective date of IFRS 15. So over the past few months, including today, the boards and we have been discussing issues that have sort of emerged from TRG discussions. Although the vast majority of any issues discussed by the TRG have been resolved actually mainly at, you know, at the TRG or with follow-on board discussions, to date the ISB has decided to amend IFRS 15 relating to licences and also to add an illustrative example or two relating to identifying performance obligations. Secondly, of course, earlier this month, the FASB decided to propose to defer the effective date of the new revenue standard by 1 year. So the effective date would then become the 15th of December 2017 for the FASB. But they also decided to permit early adoption for periods beginning after 15th December 2016, which was the original effective date of the US GAAP revenue standard. So because of both of those factors and changes that have happened since issuing IFRS 15, that's why today we're asking you whether you wish to defer the effective date of IFRS 15. So in Agenda Paper 7A, there are two options discussed. One is to defer the effective date by 1 year, and the other is just to retain the existing effective date of 1 January 2017. And there's arguments for both of those options or approaches set out in the paper in paragraphs 18 and 19 of the paper. Now, I wanted to highlight that since finalising the board paper, the ISB has actually received a number of comment letters from preparers on the effective date. And those preparers include those from the automotive and IT sectors. Those preparers support a 1 year deferral of the effective date. And because the main arguments they give is firstly, they sort of emphasise the importance of having a converged effective date. Not only for those preparers who have sort of dual reporting requirements, who within their group have IFRS and US GAAP reporting requirements, but also some highlight just sort of more generally for IFRS preparers, some think that they will be disadvantaged if they were required to apply the new revenue standard before their sort of US counterparts or competitors. And I suppose in addition, a number of those preparers also highlight that they think that one additional year would allow for a more sort of cost-effective or orderly implementation process. So on balance, we're recommending a 1 year deferral of the effective date, and the reasons are noted in the paper in paragraph 20. As we highlight in the paper, we do think that the ISB should consider deferring the effective date of a new standard only in what we might consider to be exceptional circumstances. But also, however, at the moment, we think that the combination of a number of factors mean that the current situation is somewhat exceptional. So with that, I'll hand over to you.
Ian?
I'm in favour of deferring for 1 year, as Trina's pointed out, the slightly late publication of the standard, the decisions we've made since the multinational situation and our preparers. I think all those add up to making and having convergence with FASB. The only point I'd make on convergence with FASB is my understanding is their vote was 4-3, 4 for a 1 year delay, 3 for a 2 year delay, and I understand their ED will ask the question about a 2 year delay. Both of us have EDs, we may end up in a different place, I don't know. But overall, I'd be in favour of the staff's recommendations.
It might be worth making clear then, if we decide for 1 year deferral, which I would support, that will not mean that will be the end of it, and that we will not have a second decision should the FESB later decide to go to 2 years, which I don't really expect, but which could happen.
Just one point to clarify, which is, Ian, what you said is exactly right in terms of the FASB vote and decision making. Just to clarify that our understanding in terms of the question that will be asked in the FASB's ED is there will be a question asking whether the FASB should consider a 2 year deferral for those who would choose to apply the standard on a fully retrospective basis. So it wouldn't be a question more openly, it would be specific to those entities applying it on a fully retrospective
Martin.
Basis.
Yeah, I'm also in favor of a defer, because I think it is not one reason. I think it's a combination of these reasons which we're hearing. First, that the FASB may be doing it 1 year. Secondly, as XRP will propose some clarification. And thirdly, and that is what I'm hearing from preparers also, that many companies have underestimated the work really to implement the standard, because they have done first impact studies which say concluded maybe there are in many industries that don't have really a different outcome, but the way how to reach this is really different from the old standard, and that involves a lot of work, and that work was underestimated. Therefore, what I'm hearing is also from, especially also from Germany, preparers saying, okay, they would really welcome if we defer it, so they have a little bit more time to implement the stuff.
That is, I agree with staff recommendation for the sake of convergence. However, one thing I need to make clear is about the effective date of additional clarification, which we are going to make in the summer. Paragraph 11 said that we could set the date later than the effective date in IFRS 15. So I think it's clear. However, if you look at paragraph 18, C, it says that we expect the entities likely to want to avoid applying IFRS 15, and then with the year or two changing that accounting. So therefore, we are expecting that they are going to apply it at the same time, right? So that is the one of the reason why we are going to defer effective date 1 year. However, the problem is there are many companies who are preparing for the early application. Some companies are trying to apply it from next year. And this problem is serious in Japan. Actually, there are many companies who has a plan to switch to IFRS from JGAAP, and they would like to change it, directly changing to the IFRS 15 rather than changing to IS 18 to IFRS 15. However, now we have TLG, and there are lots of changes coming. So therefore, they are wondering if they have to stop their project, postpone their switching 1 year or not, 1 or 2 years or not. I'm not happy with such kind of things to happen. So one suggestion is when we defer effective date, we have to make clear one thing. That is, for the new clarification, the effective date would be later than the effective date of IFRS 15. And on top of that, we wouldn't require any retrospective amendment for the additional clarification. The reason why I'm saying is we shouldn't penalize those who believed IFRS 15 has been finalized. Therefore, if we say that you have to make a retrospective application for the additional clarification, that means those who have believed IFRS 15 has been finalized has to face the disruption for applying the retrospective application. So that shouldn't happen. Therefore, when we announce this deferral of effective date, we should make clear that for the incoming additional clarification, we would set the effective date, which is later than the IFRS 15, and on top of that, we wouldn't require retrospective application.
I want to say that I think, TAC, that today's decision and what you're being asked to take a decision on is the general effective date of IFRS 15 as it was published in May 2014. So it in no way is sort of making a decision about the effective date of the limited amendments you've already decided to make. We haven't yet, as staff, brought you a paper or asked you that question. I think we plan to in June. So today's decision is not at all taking a decision on the, you know, the effective date of the amendments. And so I think that whatever decision you take today, we cannot make the statement that you're making to make clear what the effective date may or may not be of the limited amendments, because that is something that we will only ask you and you will make in June. All I can say is, as we, I suppose, hinted in the paper, we think for the reasons that you gave, there are certainly reasons why, you know, we would want to consider, you know, having a sort of mandatory effective date of those limited amendments as being something possibly, you know, later than the effective date of IFRS 15 itself. But again, any decision you take today doesn't sort of penalise entities anymore. Yeah. In fact, it simply just allows you to set your effective date later.
I do understand, and I don't think we have to decide it now. However, we have to take this into our mind.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you know, we simply defer it. Then that could be interpreted. We should apply new clarification at the same time. So that is kind of implementation. That is not our intention.
And I think you, by the way, personally, you've given some very good arguments why we wouldn't necessarily want to, you know, require people to apply the amendments at the same time as their first, you know, first choosing to apply IFRS 15.
John Wu.
Thank you. I generally agree with your recommendation, but my concern is some other stakeholders' ideas about this deferral. For example, investors may want to ask some additional, maybe, requirement or change of their existing IFRS 15. For example, the paragraph 5, we provided a kind of a big relief of full retrospective application. So preparers can have a kind of relief. But if we add one more year, then some other stakeholders may want to, you know, remove such a relief. Mm-hmm. Give us more good information, maybe comparative information, because preparers will get an additional year. So I'm wondering, how about the other stakeholders of our IFRS? What their opinions, if there are any, some kind of ideas about the effect of this deferral of 1 year?
I suppose all I can say is that our view, what all of our stakeholders, how they will view this, I can't say. I suppose I could only think that if you are an investor and you're looking at, you know, companies globally, even if the ISB were to retain 2017, the fact that, you know, the FASB has decided to defer by a year, there was already going to be quite a lot of global entities potentially applying the new revenue standard at different times. So I suppose that whilst some may view deferring it by a year as being a negative thing, because, you know, if you view this as being, you know, a real improvement, then you delay seeing that real improvement in some companies' financials. I also anticipate that because the FASB has decided to defer, already a lot of that benefit potentially, you know, was going to be lost, and potentially, at least for some investors, I think the fact that, you know, global companies will be moving, you know, more at the same time, possibly could be, you know, beneficial for them.
Mary?
I wanted to go back to Ian's intervention about 1 year and the debate that FASB had about whether to propose 1 or 2 years. I think it's important, and many people have cited convergence as one of the reasons that they think we should also propose a 1 year extension. And I think it's important that we send a clear message about what factors we considered as the IASB. And while convergence is one of them, I think that if that's overplayed, it would imply to some that if FASB changes their mind, we might automatically do it. And I want to say that, you know, we're hearing from some constituents, I guess the word is spontaneously, because we haven't put a proposal out about, you know, reasons for deferral. But in informal conversations, I've also heard some pushback from those who think we shouldn't even do a 1 year deferral, that this was a major improvement. They were looking to get it and get it delivered from a user perspective. And that's not a universal view, but it's something I've heard. Another thing I've heard is, from a preparer perspective, concern about having the period of uncertainty and, you know, work project drawn out. They want to have enough time to do the right thing, but they want to get closure. So I think it's important that we recount our assessment of those various factors. At the end of the day, I support the staff's recommendation, and I think it's helpful that it brings us to a converged outcome with the FASB's proposal, but I don't want to go too far, especially, you know, when I think about it, I think there's validity. I easy to make me feel guilty. Paragraph 13D talks about the actual publication date being maybe 3 or 4 months later than was anticipated when we set the effective date. But, you know, if we're just trying to correct for that, okay, maybe we do a generous rounding in terms of a year, but I don't want to send a signal that we're contemplating it being 2 years.
Okay, Gary?
Well, Mary said about half of what I was going to say, because I do think it's important as to why. I would say is it's important, convergence may be important, I think it's more important not to disadvantage our preparers and auditors and constituents like that. And whether it's a generous round or not, I've heard many times that we delayed this a long time after the fact of setting the effective date, and then you open up TRG, although few changes, but nonetheless, there are all these elements of doubt that are in the system. So I think 1 year, and then lastly, I think, quite frankly, I think everybody probably underestimated just how much work there was to do these things. So I think all these sort of row in the same direction. I think 1 year is sufficient. I'm not sure I would ask the question like the FASB did, should we consider 2 years? I don't think we should. I think this is more than sufficient time, and I'm aware of a number of preparers that were at least lobbying the FASB, if you delay it, we want early adoption, because I just want to get it done, you know, and get it behind us. The work inertia is already in place, let's just finish it. So I support the staff's recommendation.
Darryl?
On balance, I don't support the staff's recommendation. I think for reasons that everybody's covered about convergence, I think the 1 year, 2 year thing tells me that the convergence element is not the most important element here. More important, I think we spent a lot of time deliberating what we thought was an effective period for people to adopt, and I think the relief we gave in terms of comparative reporting was if anything generous given the amount of time we gave for preparation. The fact that we were a few months late, I don't think was sufficient to justify an extension. And I think we took a lot of that into account in any case during the original deliberations. I also don't think that the changes we're making are sufficiently significant to justify this. I think we've talked about them as minor amendments, and I'm comfortable that that's what they are. They are minor amendments, minor clarifications that don't change the way companies would be thinking about actually adopting. I think we need to be careful that we are not giving a very poor message or setting out a very poor precedent here, in saying that because people didn't think about this properly in the first instance, and because we're making a few minor changes, we then add a whole extra year onto this. I suspect there will be other standards that come in the future where we also will look to make minor changes. And I think the fact is, by saying that we take account of the fact that our preparers did not think about or got caught out a little bit because they thought about it a little bit late in the process, so it's a very dangerous precedent for every project in the future. It allows anybody to say, well, I didn't think it was going to be as big as it is, so I want an extra year. So I am concerned about the message we're giving, and I hope that we communicate very clearly the very specific reasons that we think drove this if we do go ahead with it.
Listening to this conversation made me change my mind from what I thought when I came in the room, which I guess is sometimes the purpose of a board discussion. But the main thing I wanted to comment on was a number of things that Mary commented on, but I think I get to a different place. But the thing I wanted to comment on was I am very concerned about the signalling we're going to create. And I think we need to be super careful with what signalling and the reasons we give for the decision that we make, getting the sense that the majority are probably going to go for the extension. Because we spent so long thinking about what the right effective date was for the standard, as we do for all of our standards. And if my memory serves me well, actually, we were nervous when we set the effective date for the standard because it was quite a long lead time relative to what we'd done in the past. So if anything, we were cautious. We ate into some of that time in the end because we delayed a bit later, but it wasn't as if we were sort of rash. And I think we really need to encourage people to think about what lead time they need when they're sending in comments on exposure drafts. And to say now it's taking me longer to implement than what I anticipated makes me really nervous, because if that's the reason why we make a change now, when we didn't really change anything fundamentally that I can recollect in terms of what the time should be to implement it from the feedback we got and where we ended up, then I worry that we're going to encourage people to send in letters on all of the four major projects after the fact saying, actually, now I've actually started thinking about this, like I asked you to do 3 years ago, I need more time. And we're going to have created a perception that it's fine to come back again. So while I have some sympathy, I think on balance the risk is too high.
Yeah, I can see your point of view, Sue, and we've been we've been sort of moved into a position on this. And to put some perspective on it, if we vote for this, then it'll be an exposure draft asking our constituents whether they agree or not. And then we're talking about an exposure draft in June to do some clarifications, and they don't appear very major, but it'll be another exposure draft. But the questions we have to front after that are, do we do any more changes? That's the next question as things come along. And then what's the role of the TRG going forward? Which, by the way, the chief accountant of the SEC has weighed in on today, saying that he thinks it's a good idea for the TRG to continue, and the ramifications that has. So I understand what you're saying, but I think, I guess I am a bit, although the two-year thing worries me, I am a bit swayed by convergence. Not that I'd go to 2 years, but I think we, and the other reasons that are given too, that so that if we could, both boards could agree on 1 year, I think that would be a satisfactory outcome.
Yeah, and only if it's helpful, you know, that for us as well, for all the reasons you've given, in paragraph 20, when we came to our recommendation, that wasn't one of the arguments that influenced our recommendation either, you know, the argument that just says it's taken longer than what I originally thought. So whilst it's what some people have told us, it wasn't something that fed into our recommendation.
That's important. Philippe?
I think to the point made by Sue, it's probably fair to recognize that many preparers could not really assess totally well the time needed for implementation on the basis of an exposure draft. And it's only when they have the final standard that they can really move into the real thing. And it's only now that many of them are really discovering how difficult or how complex it is. Not all of them, but quite a number. Just to give you an indication, I got this morning an information that out of a group of 20 preparers, French preparers, large companies, which initially did not ask for a deferral, now half of them would really think that a deferral of 1 year would really help in having better quality in implementation.
It's always going to help.
To the point made by TAC, I think having a deferral of 1 year would probably permit us to have the same effective date for the changes we are going to expose in June. If we don't defer, then we have to consider a later effective date for those small changes. If we postpone by 1 year, maybe it's easier to align the effective date of the changes, the small changes.
I still think you have to think about TAC's point about people who've early adopted.
Yeah. There must be, there might be.
Let's have that discussion.
Yeah. That might be to have a relief, but in terms of process, having a default of 1 year gives us an indication, an opportunity to align the whole effective dates, right?
I think that's one of the arguments, saying that if you don't defer, then, you know, it's going to be difficult for people for whom those amendments
then
perhaps have more significant
more
impact.
Complex to have.
I think that's one of the main arguments we're making.
It becomes more complex to have one main standard and then some amendments taking place. I prefer to have a clean and organized thing with one effective date for the whole. Yeah. Transition issues and early application is an additional complexity.
Next time. Yeah.
So in total, I would support the staff proposal to have 1 year deferred.
Last point you just gave us confused me. You say the SEC chief accountant will favor continuing the TRG. And then if we decide to postpone 1 year, whether means we will take more questions, which is different from we
board members,
you know, most of us say no.
Well, good. That's a decision for us to make. I'm just reporting what the chief accountant has said.
That has nothing to do with this decision.
Can I offer my view? No, originally, before I came, I will intend to support staff proposal. But now listen to what, you know, Daryl and Sue just said, I will favor not.
Okay, can I see who favors deferring by 1 year?
Two, three, four, five, six, seven.
11.
Oh, Steve,
and then we have already acquired prior permission by the trustees to have a specially short comment period of 30 days.
Which I think this is,
just a question about this. Yeah. Will the exposure period fall right in the middle of August, or can we issue this proposal in time so that it can be considered by people before the August break?
Our plan is very much before, because our recommendation on this is that, you know, according to the approval by the DPOC, that the comment period would be no less than 30 days, but we'll make it as long as we can make it. With the intention of having back to be finalised in July. So in fact, the comment period wouldn't even get close to August, because we plan to have a finalising discussion on this at the July board meeting.
Sorry, you know, there's a very limited part of the world that takes all of August off. And we are a global organization, and most of the world works all year long, and I'm not going to take that into account. It's just ridiculous, yeah. Especially for such a simple thing as this.
Yeah. So the idea is to have it a very short...
Publish in May.
Basically publish in May. Publish in the middle of May, in fact, that would be the plan.
Yeah, you're going to do a pre-ballot draft, you're going to write out with a ballot draft.
It'll be fast. As fast as we can.
Do you want to oversell?
If staff propose 30 days, I would disagree. So maybe it should be at least 45 days.
My gosh.
Although it looks simple, but we discussed like this, and that we are not FASB. If we are FASB, we are dealing with one jurisdiction with one language, but we are dealing with hundreds of jurisdictions with hundreds of different languages and hundreds of different legislation. And each jurisdiction has a different stage of adopting IFRS. There might be the consequence which we are not really expecting. So therefore, 30 days is quite short. If you put your shoes to that jurisdiction, the statement is made in English and somewhere in Europe, and then come to that jurisdiction and translate it and start explaining what is going on, and then get the comment, and then they make a comment back after translation. And that this topic itself looks simple, but it may not simple. We don't know yet. So therefore, I disagree.
Days, right?
I think, by the way, what we were hoping to ask you today is to say not less than 30. By the way, we do expect to be able to turn it around such that we'll be able to give people 45 days. We just didn't, if we had asked you for 45 though, and something happens and suddenly it becomes that we can only give 44, we didn't want to potentially have to come back to you.
Today the whole world will know, like we were inundated by requests from the rest of the world when the FSB decided. This is all so simple, guys.
Yeah. They already know it.
Anyway,
now.
We'll, you know, we'll do. We'll give plenty of time for people to translate the date in whatever language.
We would hope it would be 45 in any event. And literally, just so you know, the only proposed change is literally to strike the 7 and put in the 8 and have probably 4 or 5 paragraphs of basis. So it would be a very short.
Does anybody plan to dissent on this decision?
Okay, then we're done.
No? Daryl, dissent for once. This is an ideal dissenting point. All right. Are we ready for the other subject, or shall we take a break? Let's break till 2:45, okay?